That team sure did suck last night. They just plain sucked. I've seen teams suck before, but they were the suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked.
Steve Rosenbloom.
There was a keg stand I lost to an 81-year-old lady. She got off the ninth floor, but it was really close.
Mark Grody.
I've been waiting to get a hold of this guy for years. Channel 2 News is out there interviewing people. Yeah, I've been talking to my wife about getting Steve. He once connected my dots and more to my plate. I'm going to dunk his ass.
They suck, so you don't have to.
Can't you morons do anything right?
Founding members of the WB Club.
Smoke weed every day.
The three words that describe this show, and I quote.
Stink, stank, stunk.
It's Saturday Suckage on the Score.
We should be 670 WSUK.
It's Saturday Suckage. I'm Steve Rosenbloom. Let's find out who else is here. Grobber.
It sucks and it freebases.
Don Cooper.
If I think something sucks, I'll tell you it sucks.
Jake Arrieta.
This sucks. Really, it does.
Albert Almora.
Damn, Willie, man. Like, do we suck?
Eloy Amalez.
Hey, you guys are not going to make anyway. You guys suck. Hey, when I got traded the next day, oh, welcome to the suck team.
Random Bears fan.
Oh my God, this sucks!
Terry Bores!
At the front of the field, we suck!
No, I forgot Toby, didn't I? I suck at the suckage roll call.
Suck hot soda pot.
Second straight week, I suck! Where are we? Liam Hendricks, can we do him? Terry Bores?
Oh, he's just seeking perfection, he's just mainly trying not to suck.
Julie Swyka.
Man, that sucks.
I think we all need this musical interlude from Avenue Q. No? It's all gone? Wilson Contreras.
Losing suck. I'll tell you that, and that's all I can say.
George Wendt.
We had fun, but there you go. I sucked.
Garth Algar.
Turn it off, man! Turn it off! It's sucking my will to live!
Keep it all!
Disco sucks!
Candace Park.
It sucks.
Roquan Smith.
Yeah, man. Sucks.
Zach Levine.
It sucks to have a game one.
DeMar DeRozan.
You know, it just sucks.
Future and present Bears Justin Fields coach Mike Tomlin.
It all sucks. There's not degrees of suck. It all sucks.
Yes, it all sucks. Josh Allen.
Sucks. Losing sucks. Sucks.
Bob Costas.
I also don't understand, or maybe I should just applaud you, for having the self-confidence to label your own show Saturday Suckage.
Tyler Farrengold.
I will suck so you don't have to.
Yeah, well, too late. I already did it for everybody out there. This is Saturday Suckage, as if you couldn't tell. We suck so you don't have to. We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealer. Phone number here at the Score, if you dare, 312-644-6767. That'll get you to our listener line, powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. That number, 312-644-6767, also gets you to the Score's text line. All right, so let's start here. I'll run down the guests and do all that stuff later. Grody at 11:25 or 11:20, whenever I get done with this. But I want to explore something that might or might not be a thing for the Bears, but I'm certain it will be for you and probably for Caleb Williams. The presumptive number one pick, the presumptive Bears choice first overall, Caleb Williams had his pro day this week. And the Bears were there, boy, were they. The Bears had a 4-day, 3-night reservation. They spent a lot of time with him, and Caleb Williams knew what it was all about.
At the NFL level, obviously, a lot of the attention's on the Chicago Bears. I mean, you know that. It's been the discourse for the past couple of weeks.
Yep.
What's been your conversations like with them? What kind of things have they wanted to kind of know from you outside of the football playing part of it?
Yeah. So, you see a bunch of stuff always on social media about me. Even though I don't speak or post much, you see everything about me every single day, recently at least. And so they want to just get to know me, see what type of player I am. Because, to be the number one pick, you're investing a lot into a QB and players that are number one picks. And so they want to see who they're investing their time, energy, and effort into, money into. And that's, first and foremost what they're trying to do.
That's Caleb Williams talking with Lewis Riddick of ESPN, and the Bears getting to know him. They're going first, second, third, and fourth dates, and they want to go steady. So Williams' critics will point out that after, the Heisman Trophy in 2022, he struggled last year. Everybody's looking. Team's not as good, but everybody's looking. And he had that 3-interception game against Notre Dame. Now, that performance was a certain segment of Bears fans, the Justin Fields stands. That's all they needed to see to pass judgment. And crying after the loss to Washington, so critics questioned his toughness. Here's the thing with Caleb Williams' toughness. You won't know until you know. That's the Bears' problem, and that's the truth. Josh Lucas of the Ryan Pace quarterback choosing disaster, who openly admitted, the Bears' mistake in drafting Mitch Trubisky over Patrick Mahomes knows how tough the Chicago Bears spotlight can be, right? Because he saw how the spotlight played at least a small part in Trubisky's demise, running around, turning off all the televisions. He couldn't handle it. They didn't know that. They, Ryan Pace, he's got a cute car and a cute story, and he makes dinner reservations. Lucas told the Tribune, I think it was Dan Weider, he discussing toughness in interviews, Lucas said, and he was talking about being a quarterback in Chicago, it's obviously borderline overwhelming the way it's covered. There's very little leash to have consecutive bad games. The opinions are made very strongly among the media personalities around here very early. And he's seen that. And he knows. And that's part of the toughness. How would the Bears begin to identify that? How would they begin to identify whether any player, but particularly a guy in the greatest spotlight in Chicago? Look, Caleb Williams is going to be, he might not be Michael Jordan, but he could see him from there in terms of attention. We're not talking about quality of accomplishments, quality of play, none of that, whatever you do. But he's going to be bigger than the mayor. He's going to be bigger than the governor. He's going to be bigger than the chairman of the Chicago Welfare Sox standing at the corner of Roosevelt and Clark asking for money. He will be the biggest name in Chicago. He will be, that will be a spotlight with a white hot intensity of a supernova. Last year's Notre Dame disaster, 3 interceptions against the Irish. That's Mondo Suckage. And it might have been louder here than in Los Angeles. And that's the thing. It's the thing Caleb Williams has no idea about. He has never experienced that kind of supernova coverage and criticism. Don't confuse Caleb Williams' time in L.A. with the Chicago spotlight. And here's why. They have real celebrities in L.A.? I mean, just all you had to do was watch a Lakers game in the 1980s and 2000s. And the bigger names were watching the game. Jack, Denzel, and Dustin. In Chicago, we had the biggest names on the court. The biggest name on the court. Biggest name in the world on the court. Because we don't have real celebrities. We had two. We had Fat Oprah and Thin Oprah, and both of them left town. In L.A., it's different. What Caleb Williams went through is different. Because in L.A. sports, all sports, just a general category of sports, competes with movies, television / streaming platforms, and Sunscreen 50. In sports, Chicago, in Chicago sports, that's your celebrities, that and the corrupt politicians. That's it. That's what we got. So when you look at that, when you look at Williams, remember that. The Bears must know that. The Bears must know it's a hotter spotlight here. This administration wasn't there when Mitch Trubisky was turning off all the televisions, but the story is known. And don't convince you, don't believe for a minute that Caleb Williams has ever experienced something like this. That he, well, hasn't experienced something like he could face when he sucks. And he's going to suck. He's a rookie quarterback in the NFL. This might be the best opportunity a rookie quarterback has ever had. This might be the best situation. He just got Keenan Allen and promised him 1,000 yards and 15 tutties and all that. Good. I want him to be right. It would be great if he's right. And there's DJ Moore over there and DeAndre Swift. And a better situation than probably any rookie quarterback has walked in, been drafted into first overall. But he's still a rookie quarterback. It's still the NFL. Those big guys are faster than the big guys you faced before. And everybody's looking. And everybody's looking in Chicago, not L.A., when they're looking at the celebrities. Oh, look, you know what? If this were L.A., Ashton Kutcher would be a bigger name on the sidelines. He'd be on the sidelines more often. Bill Murray, too. It is something that he will face because he's not going to go 16-18-0, 17-0. How many games are they playing now? I don't know. 17-0, 18 weeks. Okay. And whatever Williams said before, and he handled it brilliantly, and whatever he said after the draft, he owned the podium at the combine. I really think he owned all the post game. He went on with everybody. He was there after his pro day. He was on with Colin Cowherd. He was on with Lewis Riddick. He was NFL Network everywhere. That, and he handled himself. And whether you think he was cocky or arrogant, you know what? You want your quarterback to have a little bit of that. You don't want to have him a lot of Cade McNown. You don't want him to, you don't want him to be a walking rectum like Cutler. You want him to say, he said the right things, you want him to understand. And what you have to understand, and he comes in with some credibility because he's handled a lot of the attention flawlessly. But what he hasn't done, what we don't know, what the Bears don't know, and what Williams doesn't know, is what that spotlight feels like when you're the most important person in the city. This city. Because we don't have real celebrities. We don't have other distractions other than groveling billionaires. We have a quarterback for the Bears described by some as generational. Not that we know what that looks like unless we look to Green Bay. But whatever we don't know until Caleb Williams and the Bears won't know until they know. And God bless, God hope he doesn't go around shutting off all the televisions in Hallis Hall. Turn on your radio. We're going to talk more Bears, quarterbacks, and other positions with a man who knows all about them. He's Mark Grody. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Saturday Suckage. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Oh, hi, Mark.
It's Throwback Saturday on Saturday Suckage. Listen to that, Mark Grody. It's Throwback Saturday.
That's how you do it.
Joining me on the guest hotline presented by Circa Sports Illinois is the aforementioned, the aforeheard, Mark Grody. How are you, sir?
I am doing well. I'm just glad that I get to listen to a generational talk show host like Steve Rosenblum on a Saturday morning in the city of Chicago.
Right, a generation removed from reality. But that's that's the way we fill time and space here. We're just the village people. Just
well
don't
done.
Cost the station its license. So everybody watched Caleb Williams Pro Day. And I got to say, it looked like, all right, let's go put on a show for him. Let's go. It wasn't Globetrotter stuff. It was the route tree. It was a little sparkle there. Hi, we're going to go deep. We're going to go deeper than you've ever seen. It's going to be spot on, and there you go. And he handled everything, I thought, terrifically well. The media car wash that he had to go through. I don't know. What did you think, and what did you make of it? Were the highlights or lowlights? What did you think of his pro day and performance afterwards?
I thought I had a gentleman on the show the other night by the name of Yogi Roth. He of the Pac-12 network. He was at the USC Pro Day. I talked to him often on the air, and I thought he put it best that all Caleb Williams had to do at this performance was show signs of life. Yep. That's a great line. I figure you would appreciate that.
Yeah.
All he had to do, all you have to do,
fog up a mirror,
is say the letter C. That's all you have to do is write the letter. No, but that was very well put. That all he had to do at this show is not be dead, not have been paralyzed or something horrible happened to him. Oh, he threw the ball, and you could tell. Now, I was not at the pro day, but I did get to see a lot of it, and just watching the reactions of Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus and some of the interactions with Shane Waldron, it felt like a very loose occasion. There are signs of life. He is fine. He has now, in my opinion, it seems like from, as you put it, the car wash and him talking to the media, he has passed that twice now. He understands the right things to say. He also is very good at not assuming that he is a Chicago Bear, even though he knows he's going to be a Chicago Bear, where he generalizes a little bit because we ask these stupid questions about, yep, hey, what would it be like to be a Bear? Do you think it'd be fun to play at Soldier Field? Are you looking forward to playing with Keenan? Well, if I was to be a Bear, it'd be really fun to play with Keenan. So I think now, twice now, he's done very well with the media. And those are the two parts of it. Signs of life, good with the media, so he passed the test for me.
One of the things the Bears had talked about, or it had been talked about or leaked out, that the Bears, because they made sure to talk to his teammates. And it reminds me of draft day, right? Kevin Costner going, nobody went to his birthday party. That kind of thing, right?
So, right.
So they taught the Bears, in some form or another, talked or had dinner with and got to know his teammates, and that looked like a pretty loose group on the field going through all of that and going through, and he made them look good. I don't know what he did for Brendan Rice's draft status, but he couldn't have hurt it with some of those throws, with some of those opportunities. And I think they all, if you're looking for somebody who, if you're looking to pick at a guy, oh, well, his teammates don't like him, he's a prima donna, he's cocksure, he's arrogant, he's like, well, they probably want to follow a guy like that because that's what football players do. They do it with coaches, they do it with quarterbacks. So did that, whatever you've talked to people about, what do you make of the Bears' emphasis or discussion of his relationship with his teammates and, by extension, leadership?
Yeah, it feels like the testimonials for Caleb Williams from teammates and from coaches have been spot on. And unfortunately for Caleb Williams, it felt like he needed some of that just because of some of the stories that had come out about him and not talking to the media and all the same things that we've heard over and over and over. And now a lot of people have come to his side, the testimony, like just a little bit over the top, I think, at this point, too. Like, it's gone from questioning his character to he's the greatest teammate of all time. And he's it's not his fault, but necessarily, you know, like, it's just overcompensation because of the stuff that was put out there. And like I said, some of it he's culpable for, or his dad is culpable for, or whomever, his camp, whatever you want to say. So I think that there is some, as we say, Steve, I think there's some over adjusting that is happening right now when it comes to his character and anything that is peripheral to actually throwing a football on a field.
Whatever there might have been before, I think that this, what the over adjusting of us and looking at him now and seeing this, like that he, somebody at some point, or several people will probably say, well, he's been coached into this and he's been told, and good, he can take coaching. That's a really good sign. He can take coaching. He managed to wield the spotlight back at people because he was owning it, and I thought that was great. And he was talking about his situation, his prospective situation, and we were talking about, you and I, just about his current teammates. So his future teammates, likely future teammate, Jalen Johnson, was on Up and Adams and had this to say. I want our audience to hear it. I'm sure you've heard it, but I want you to comment on it. This is Jalen Johnson talking about the presumptive number one pick coming into the Bears locker room.
Guys like you in that locker room, you're going to set the tone a little bit, sounds like, for whatever rookie or whatever quarterback comes in there. Is Eberflus up for that? Like, is he up for, handling a Caleb? I don't know. Yeah.
I feel like you just humble yourself coming in the building. I feel like it's one of those things where it's like, you can't, like you said, you can't bring that Hollywood stuff into the building, especially now with guys who play this game. I feel like at a high level for consecutive years in the league, it's just something that guys like myself, guys like Tremaine, TJ, I mean, just the vets now, Keenan Allen. I mean, you just adding certain guys in the locker room. I feel like we're gonna see through, and it's like, nah, that what you did in college, the Hollywood, it's like, nah, that you gotta prove yourself, that stuff like that doesn't matter. But I feel like too, you gotta get to know him too. I think it's a fine line between trying to prove a point to him, but also getting to know him, because I mean, at the end of the day, we want him to be the absolute best he can be. I mean, that's what we're bringing him in for, to win games. So I think truly just learning who he is as a person, learning him deeper than just all the Hollywood stuff you see, but actually trying to learn and get to know him, and then from there knowing what pushes him. If it is trash talk makes him crumble, then I mean, I feel like we got to push that button, because people in the game, they're going to push that button. So just depending on whatever it is that he needs to be pushed at, I feel like that's our job and that's our duty as his teammates, to make him better, to strengthen his weaknesses.
Jalen Johnson on with Kay Adams on Up and Adams. And Mark, if there was any, if you're of the belief that there's going to be an insurrection in the locker room because Justin Fields isn't there, just listen to Jalen Johnson. I mean, that's one of the things that jumped out at me. What jumped out at you about that? What do you think of what Jalen Johnson said?
Yeah, I agree with that. And a couple things jumped out to me. Number one, Jalen Johnson, he speaks from experience. This is a guy who at one point in time was humbled, I think. You know, the training camp day where he was found himself, or was it OTAs, where he was second string on Matt Eberflus's watch, and he was kind of looking around like, what's this hits thing, hits principle? So he was humbled and then eventually got paid, so he can relate to it. The Caleb Williams, you know, Hollywood, you got to prove yourself. That stuff is all very true, and you're just going to be, you know, rank and file, come into the building and do like everybody else. However, I have no problem with Caleb Williams if he comes in and he can have that Hollywood loose side to him, and that he is borderline cocky. That's all stuff that you need in a quarterback. But it is true, and I heard you talking about it earlier in the show, Steve, before I came on. Chicago is a different monster when it comes to sports. And yeah, LA is a big market. That's a big, big market. But the sports microscope, the sports monster, is not the same in Los Angeles as it is in Chicago. And you can only understand it by being in Chicago or having played in Chicago. And I think that there's a quarterback that's backing up Russell Wilson in Pittsburgh that could tell you about the Chicago machine that exists.
And there's one in Buffalo who can tell you, oh, my God, no!
They're all over the place. They are. They're all over the place.
There are so many quarterbacks who are roadkill. And yeah, everybody's looking. In L.A., they're just on the road. People are stuck in traffic, and they're angry. But they get they get hangry, and they get road rage, and that's what they do is they're driving to their next meeting and their next pitch session, and that's what it's a whole different thing. And USC isn't even – I mean, even if you were a Laker or a Dodger, you're still not as important as movies, as TV, as SPF 50. You're just not because in L.A., here, like, who's bigger than the Bears quarterback?
Nobody's bigger than the Bears. You're right. That's such a great point. I mean, hell, you read, like, the descriptions of Chicago, and they describe a beautiful architecture, the river, the lake, sports hub. Like, it's literally in the description. Hello, I'm Chicago. I'm sports. That's part of, like, people come to Chicago for the sports. It's a sports hub. Yeah, hello, I'm Chicago sports.
At noon, I'm having sports hub on. He'll be here at noon to talk more Bears football. So,
hey, how's it going, Steve?
Yeah, that's right. So you're doing that. You're doing that. You're doing the whole broadcast day, aren't you?
I don't know if my hub's very good.
You know, you have to, if you're going to do all of Dustin Rhodes' betting guys that they have in the morning show, you're going to have to speak like a Muppet. They all sound like Muppets. But just that'll give you a head start. So, Ed, just as you said, we've gone so far overboard one way or another with Caleb Williams, and he's this and oh, he's that, and now we're making up for it. Ben. So that often happens. Stock rises, stock falls. And so do opinions about such as the Bears and the number 9 pick. I don't know where you are with that now. Where have you been? What do you think?
I've been in a lot of places with the number 9 pick. I think that it is possible that that guys like, here are the guys that I think could be possible at number 9, and it's a lot of different players. I think that I think it's possible that one of those wide receivers, Malik Nabers or Roma Dunze, would be available. I think Joe Alt, the offensive lineman from Notre Dame, could be available. I still think Brock Bowers, the Georgia tight end. I know they have lots of tight ends. Jared Verse could still be available there. So I think that they're that the defensive lineman, edge rusher. So, man, I'm having a hard time trying to figure it out, but there are ways that all of those guys would be available. One of the spots that I look at on the draft board is what are the Chargers going to do at number 5? Because there you have Jim Harbaugh coming in. Mm-hmm. That would probably be a spot for, if we do believe that the Bears, Washington, and the Patriots are taking quarterbacks, Arizona, I think, would take Marvin Harrison Jr. I think the Chargers, then, there you have Jim Harbaugh. Does he want the generational left tackle? Actually, I should not use the word generational, but does he want the left tackle? Does he want Malik Nabers? Does he want the wide receiver? Because they're all out of wide receivers. So I think that's an interesting spot. I think you can get through the Giants because I think they're going to be crazy and take J.J. McCarthy. You know, the Titans just got Calvin Ridley. Atlanta is loaded with offensive, you know, firepower. So I do think that there is a case to be made that the Bears could have some of those receivers available or even one of the talented edge rushers.
Before I let you go, then, do we have enough draft history with Ryan Poles to know whether he would he hew to his draft board and draft the bluest player available, the best player regardless of position,
right,
or negotiate with himself? We need a wide receiver, we need an edge rusher, we have the edge rusher rated higher, but I want the wide receiver. Do we know enough Ryan Poles to figure out which way he would go in that situation?
It's a great question, because in the mock draft that I I did. The first one I did, and this is before free agency, and it definitely, I'm looking forward to doing another one that reflects what the Bears have done since free agency and the trading period and getting Keenan Allen. But when I did my first mock draft, the name that I came up with, and I mentioned already, is Brock Bowers, and it was because best player available. Look, I know that you have a decent amount invested in that position right now, obviously with Cole Kmet, and then the signing of Gerald Everett, not that big of a deal, but like it's dumb to the idea that, oh, you can't just take care of a position for the next 7 years. The idea that you can't do that is dumb. So I am confident that I don't know that there's a, I mean, you could definitely look for trends in the way a GM picks, and in this case, Ryan Poles, but each year is so different based on needs, and it's always nice to say best player available, but, you know, so many times that these are influenced by needs. The reason that I keep on throwing the Brock Bowers thing out there, Steve, is because of what you're saying, that it might be the best player available. I don't know how, like, Dallas Turner and Jared Verse, the two edge rushers, one from Alabama, one from Florida State, they're both very good, but they're not. It's not like last year where you had Will Anderson, you know, where you just had a slam dunk guy at that spot. So I don't know. Long-winded way, Steve is saying, I'd like to think that Ryan Poles can do best available at that number nine spot, if he keeps number nine.
Yeah, that's a whole other discussion. Well, we'll have to talk it about is. That later before we get to the draft.
That'd be fun, Steve. I would look very forward to discussing that with you, but I know you've got other things to do and other people to talk to.
Have to let you go and say hi to Gene and Gary Grody and find out whatever Gary Grody has to get from the Jewels.
It's a big week for Gary Grody. Gary Grody is on his own this week.
Oh.
Gene has gone to Arizona to see her sister. So right now it's and Gary, you know, Gary doesn't want to be bothered that much. He wants to just kind of live his bachelor life for a few days. I'm going to see him, but he's like, everybody's trying to take care of me and come over and like make sure I'm okay. I'm like, leave me alone. I want to do stuff like anybody does when their wife leaves town. So
does she have to do the FaceTime therapy thing about walking him through the Jewels and having to be different?
No, because he wouldn't understand how to turn on FaceTime.
He's got a flip phone. All right.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, bye.
All right. Mark Grody covers the Bears. And he does it for the Score, and we have a lot of fun. Mark Grody's a wonderful, wonderful reporter and a better person and just terrific to talk with. We're going to talk some baseball, and you should know this. Spring training action for the Cubs continues today against the Brewers. Coverage begins at 2:55 right here on the Score, 670 the Score, with Zach Zaidman and Ron Coomer on the call. For the latest news on the Cubs or Sox, try listening to chapters from our show through the Odyssey app. Just search for 670 The Score. Tap on a recent episode of our show to get started. We'll take a break, and then we'll get started with Tony Andracki of Marquee. We'll talk Cubs. They're going to play. They got questions. Who's going to play? Who's going to pitch? Justin Steele got an owie. Now what? I'm Steve Rosenblum. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Especially so with Jameson down for a little bit here.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of speaking to my point, you know, like him going down and, you know, everyone around here feels comfortable with the guy that's going to be able to step up, take those innings. And then when J-Mo gets back, you know, he can take his time and we know he'll come back. You know, he was looking really good leading up to that. So, yeah, we know he'll get back. But like I said, you know, it's always good to have depth with pitching for instances like that.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Oddly, I don't want to call him Justin Fields. That's Justin Steele. I feel more of an instinct to call him Remington Steele. That just shows my age. Welcome and welcome back to Saturday Suckage. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Welcome on the guest hotline presented by Circa Sports Illinois. He covers the Cubs for MarqueeNetwork.com. Tony Andracki is back with his show. Tony, thanks for taking time out today. I appreciate you joining me.
Hey, yeah, no problem.
So we just heard from Justin Steele. How is he? Took a liner, a bouncer. He took something off his knee, and he tweeted out, "I'm okay, my bracket is not," which is tremendous. So I guess he's okay. What's the latest? What do you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the
the main thing, right? It's also kind of a cool aspect in the world of social media lately is we just hear directly from players how how they are health-wise and how their brackets are doing. I know Bijan Robinson had a great bracket, like a historic first round or first couple of days too. So, no, I know it's pretty cool. And, I mean, I think that definitely makes sense. You know, Steele, they weren't going to take any chances with him. I think there's some concern, obviously, when it's 6 days away from his first start of the season, opening day, to see him walk off kind of gingerly. But, you know, I think the lucky part was the ball hit the ground first and at least deflected some of the momentum before it hit. I think it was just below the knees where it caught him. So he should be good to go, but kind of a good reminder, especially, you know, like he was talking about with Jameson Taillon out, that the Cubs are kind of one bad bounce away from some really bad things happening, but seem to have avoided it in this case.
Is he still your opening day starter? Isn't it, I mean, the last start of spring training, especially with the extra day or two, depending how the team works it out, but usually going to sort of ramp up. I don't know how many pitches they could expect of him. Do they want him to go on opening day? Has there been discussion of changing the opening day starter to maybe Kerry Wood or Mark Pryor? No, wait, I didn't say but what's his status now?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I don't know for sure. I would assume that he would be in line and be fine. And, you know, like you said, maybe he isn't quite built up the way they want him to, but usually they look at they kind of feel built up and the last start is more to kind of lock stuff in. And, Steele admitted earlier in spring that he really doesn't even look at any of the starts in spring for anything other than getting out healthy and using time to build up. Like, he wasn't worried about being like competitive or going out and pitching to a game plan or anything like that. So I think he should be able to flip the switch. He should be ready for opening day, I would imagine. If he's not, I mean, what's kind of funny about it is the guy that's on the same schedule as him right now is the new fifth starter, Javier Assad. So if it's not Steele, maybe they alter some other things around and Hendricks gets the ball for opening day, or maybe they keep the same schedule and Javier Assad, who would be on normal rest because he also pitched yesterday, maybe he would get the opening day start. So a guy who we didn't even think would be in the rotation could kind of be the backup if Justin Steele is not able to go because of this, you know, bruise and whatever else he's dealing with here.
Or let's just spin the prize wheel and see who gets the opening day start. I mean, that's kind of what you're doing. And with days off and then early in the season, it's not that you don't want to win games, but you need pitching to survive. You need to build up your pitching. So given Assad and given the way the Drew Smyly in the bullpen, what do you think of the way they've lined up the rotation and what do you think of this staff?
Yeah, you know, I do think that it makes a lot of sense. I think that Assad is in the rotation and Smiley's in the bullpen because of kind of the trickle-down effect. So if Smyly was in the rotation with Taillon out, you'd have four left-handed starters, which is kind of difficult to do, I think, you know, when you have like the Rangers, who are a good offensive club, they have some pretty good right-handed hitters too. I don't know if you necessarily would want to start a bunch of lefties against them, but that's still the opening series of the season anyway. So, you know, Smyly or Assad aren't planning on starting against them. But I think just in general, you know, I don't know if you want four left-handed starters in your rotation. And then in the bullpen, you know, if you're wanting to carry Assad anyways, you would probably have to keep Luke Little up, you know, to start in the, you know, in the opening day roster in the bullpen. So you have a lefty option down there. Otherwise, you're kind of in the same boat as last year where they spent most of last season without a left-handed reliever. So now I think they kind of solved all those problems. They have two righties in the rotation until Taillon gets back. They have a lefty and Smyly in the bullpen. Now they can choose to keep Little in the big leagues if they want or send him down to AAA, and he's one of the first calls if they need another lefty or just another arm. So I think it makes a lot of sense in this regard, but certainly, you know, we'll kind of see how the final couple of days of spring plays out. And if a guy like C.J. Edwards is, you know, a non-roster guy, if he ends up making an opening day bullpen or some of the other trickle-down effects here that we're going to be seeing in the next couple of days.
And what are the chances that C.J. Edwards, longtime favorite, or favorite from a short while ago when championship rings were being won, what are the chances?
Honestly, my thought is pretty good. I mean, he's looked pretty good this spring. He's pitched really well, actually, the last couple of years for the Washington Nationals, kind of flying under the radar because the Nationals haven't been a very good team. And the Cubs, for example, have only played them twice. So, you know, CJ has pitched against the Cubs a couple of times over the last two seasons. But he bounced around for a while in between his Cubs tenure and kind of resurging, this resurgence that he's had in Washington. So, but he looks pretty good. You know, he liked the opportunity. He said it was either the Cubs or the Rangers who had the opportunities for him in the offseason. Took a minor league deal, is in camp as a non-roster guy, and he's the last non-roster guy that hasn't been cut. You know, Edwin Escobar, another non-roster reliever, was just cut yesterday or 2 days ago. So, Edwards is around. He's definitely an option, and there's only a couple other options that could be in that opening day bullpen, and it might come down to, like, him or Luke Little or something like that. But I do think it's a little bit easier because Dom Smith was looking like a good bet for a non-roster guy to need a 40-man spot, but he just opted out of his contract yesterday. So I'd say chances are pretty strong that Edwards starts the year in the bullpen.
My guest is Tony Andracki. He covers the Cubs for MarqueeSportsNetwork.com. We're talking Cubs baseball here. You're home of the Cubs on the Score, Chicago Sports Radio 670. So the corners are with Patrick Wisdom hurt, and the question about Michael Bush at first and Christopher Morel at third, but compare and just assess their progress and assess what was expected to be shown at the major league level of these two in this spring training.
Yeah, I think, so I'll start with Morel. I mean, at third base, Craig Counsell has reminded often this spring that it's not going to be something that they are evaluating or anybody else should evaluate on a day-to-day basis. They're looking at it long-term over the course of a full season, over, so not even just 6 weeks of spring, but, you know, 162-game regular season as well. So we've seen Morel make some pretty good plays over there. We've seen him make the routine plays. We've seen also the same things that have plagued him, you know, at third base the entire time that we've seen him in his big league career of, you know, wild throws, you know, a little bit of inaccuracy overall, just mistakes on even some simple plays. So we've seen a little bit of both, and I think that that's kind of just going to happen. I do think that it was probably good for him to spend the entire spring at one position. He's working out there a ton, you know, taking a lot of ground balls, doing all he can to kind of get ready there. And I think at third base, you know, if it's not him, maybe Bush can go over there. I think he's a backup option. Miles Mastroboni, and then, yeah, without Wisdom, it also depends on if Nick Madrigal, who's recovering from a hamstring injury, if he's ready to go on opening day or if he starts on the IL. If he is ready, then I think, you know, he's the main backup at third base and maybe even a defensive replacement late in close games as well. But if he's not ready, then, yeah, I think probably Mastroboni and Bush are the guys that are behind Morel there. At first, the Cubs really like Bush defensively at first base. I think there's definitely some questions, you know, about is he going to be able to hit at the big league level, because he only had like a 25-game sample for the Dodgers last year. It was all inconsistent. I don't know if he ever even started on back-to-back days with them, but it was over the course of the full year. But he was the Triple-A MVP. He had just incredible numbers, drove in about a run a game, scored about a run a game in Triple-A last year. So, you know, he's a top prospect. He's a guy that has proven all he can in the minors, and the Cubs really feel like he deserves a runway in the big league. So we'll see. You know, he's an unproven guy, but has looked pretty good this spring at the plate, another left-handed bat. So, and then without him, it looks like Garrett Cooper, especially now, like I said, that Dom Smith is gone, looks like Garrett Cooper, the veteran on a minor league deal, that he probably makes the team on the opening day roster and provides some depth at first or DH or whatever else. So I think the Cubs have options. And then, you know, the fact that Bellinger can always move over and Talkman can play center, I think also gives the Cubs some versatility on the roster.
Can we have Bellinger play third while Bush plays first and Talkman play center? Because Bellinger's a Gold Glover wherever he goes. So can he play third too?
You know what? I would love to see a left-handed third baseman or shortstop. I haven't seen that since like the 16-inch softball days here in Chicago.
Yeah, I played against a guy named Bobby Mitchell. He made the big leagues for the Dodgers, a defensive whiz. He played shortstop left-handed, and they went to the Little League World Series and lost to Mexico 1-0. But he played it left-handed. So, yeah, wow. Come on. You're certainly guarding the line, right? Late in the game, you're guarding the line with a left-handed third baseman. All right, let's get that started, Tony.
Sounds good.
All right, thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Tony Andracki of MarqueeSportsNetwork.com covering the Cubs. Take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk more Bears with the Sports Hub, as Mark Rohde and I discussed. Hub Arkish is next. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670 The Score.
Especially so with Jameson down for a little bit here.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of speaking to my point, you know, like him going down and, you know, everyone around here feels comfortable with the guy that's going to be able to step up, take those innings. And then when J-Mo gets back, you know, he can take his time and we know he'll come back. You know, he was looking really good leading up to that. So, yeah, we know he'll get back. But like I said, you know, it's always good to have depth with pitching for instances like that.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Oddly, I don't want to call him Justin Fields. That's Justin Steele. I feel more of an instinct to call him Remington Steele. That just shows my age. Welcome and welcome back to Saturday Suckage. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Welcome on the guest hotline presented by Circa Sports Illinois. He covers the Cubs for MarqueeNetwork.com. Tony Andracki is back with the show. Tony, thanks for taking time out today. I appreciate you joining me.
Hey, yeah, no problem.
So, we just heard from Justin Steele. How is he? He took a liner, a bouncer, he took something off his knee, and he tweeted out, "I'm okay, my bracket is not," which is tremendous. So, I guess he's okay. What's the latest? What do you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the main thing, right? It's also kind of a cool aspect in the world of social media lately is we just hear directly from players how how they are health-wise and how their brackets are doing. I know Bijan Robinson had a great bracket, like a historic first round or first couple of days too. So, no, I know it's pretty cool. And, I mean, I think that definitely makes sense. You know, Steele, they weren't going to take any chances with him. I think there's some concern, obviously, when it's 6 days away from his first start of the season on opening day, to see him walk off kind of gingerly. But, you know, I think the lucky part was the ball hit the ground first and at least deflected some of the momentum before it hit. I think it was just below the knee is where it caught him. So he should be good to go, but kind of a good reminder, especially, you know, like he was talking about with Jameson Taillon out, that the Cubs are kind of one bad bounce away from some really bad things happening, but seem to have avoided it in this case.
Is he still your opening day starter? Isn't it? I mean, the last start of spring training, especially with the extra day or two, depending how the team works it out, but you're usually going to sort of ramp up. I don't know how many pitches they could expect of him. Do they want him to go on opening day? Has there been discussion of changing the opening day starter to maybe Kerry Wood or Mark Pryor? No, wait, I didn't say that. But what's his status now?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I don't know for sure. I would assume that he would be in line and be fine. And, you know, like you said, maybe he isn't quite built up the way they want him to. But usually they look at they've kind of feel built up and the last start is more to kind of lock stuff in. And Steele admitted earlier in spring that he really doesn't even look at any of the starts in spring for anything other than getting out healthy and using time to build up. Like he wasn't worried about being like competitive or going out and pitching to a game plan or anything like that. So I think he should be able to flip the switch. He should be ready for opening day, I would imagine. If he's not, I mean, what's kind of funny about it is the guy that's on the same schedule as him right now is the new fifth starter, Javier Assad. So if it's not Steele, maybe they alter some other things around and Hendricks gets the ball for opening day, or maybe they keep the same schedule and Javier Assad, who would be on normal rest because he also pitched yesterday, maybe he would get the opening day start. So a guy who we didn't even think would be in the rotation could kind of be the backup if Justin Steele is not able to go because of this, you know, bruise and whatever else he's dealing with here.
Or let's just spin the prize wheel and see who gets the opening day start. I mean, that's kind of what you're doing. And with days off and then early in the season, it's not that you don't want to win games, but you need pitching to survive. You need to build up your pitching. So given Assad and given the way the Drew Smyly in the bullpen, what do you think of the way they've lined up the rotation and what do you think of this staff?
Yeah, you know, I do think that it makes a lot of sense. I think that Assad is in the rotation and Smiley's in the bullpen because of kind of the trickle-down effect. So if Smyly was in the rotation with Taillon out, you'd have four left-handed starters, which is kind of difficult to do, I think, you know, when you have like the Rangers, who are a good offensive club, they have some pretty good right-handed hitters too. I don't know if you necessarily would want to start a bunch of lefties against them, but that's still the opening series of the season anyway. So, you know, Smyly or Assad aren't planning on starting against them. But I think just in general, you know, I don't know if you want four left-handed starters in your rotation. And then in the bullpen, you know, if you're wanting to carry Assad anyways, you would probably have to keep Luke Little up, to start in the in the opening day roster in the bullpen. So you have a lefty option down there. Otherwise, you're kind of in the same boat as last year where they spent most of last season without a left-handed reliever. So now I think they kind of solved all those problems. They have two righties in the rotation until Tyone gets back. They have a lefty and Smiley in the bullpen. Now they can choose to keep Little in the big leagues if they want or send him down to AAA, and he's one of the first calls if they needed another lefty or just another arm. So I think it makes a lot of sense in this regard, but certainly, you know, we'll kind of see how the final couple of days of spring plays out. And if a guy like C.J. Edwards is, you know, a non-roster guy, if he ends up making an opening day bullpen or some of the other trickle-down effects here that we're going to be seeing in the next couple of days.
And what are the chances that C.J. Edwards, longtime favorite or favorite from a short while ago when championship rings were being won, what are the chances?
Honestly, my thought is pretty good. I mean, he's looked pretty good this spring. He's pitched really well, actually, the last couple of years for the Washington Nationals, kind of flying under the radar because the Nationals haven't been a very good team. And the Cubs, for example, have only played them twice. So, you know, CJ has pitched against the Cubs a couple of times over the last two seasons. But he bounced around for a while in between his Cubs tenure and kind of resurging, this resurgence that he's had in Washington. So, but he looks pretty good. You know, he liked the opportunity. He said it was either the Cubs or the Rangers who had the opportunities for him in the offseason, took a minor league deal, is in camp as a non-roster guy, and he's the last non-roster guy that hasn't been cut. You know, Edwin Escobar, another non-roster reliever, was just cut yesterday or 2 days ago. So, Edwards is around. He's definitely an option, and there's only a couple other options that could be in that opening day bullpen, and it might come down to, like, him or Luke Little or something like that. But I do think it's a little bit easier because Dom Smith was looking like a good bet for a non-roster guy to need a 40-man spot, but he just opted out of his contract yesterday. So I'd say chances are pretty strong that Edwards starts the year in the bullpen.
My guest is Tony Andracki. He covers the Cubs for MarqueeSportsNetwork.com. We're talking Cubs baseball here. You're home of the Cubs on the Score, Chicago Sports Radio 670. So the corners are with Patrick Wisdom hurt, and the question about Michael Bush at first and Christopher Morel at third, but compare and just assess their progress and assess what was expected to be shown at the major league level of these two in this spring training.
Yeah, I think so. I'll start with Morel. I mean, at third base, Craig Counsell has reminded often this spring that it's not going to be something that they are evaluating or anybody else should evaluate on a day-to-day basis. They're looking at it long-term over the course of a full season, over, so not even just 6 weeks of spring, but, you know, 162-game regular season as well. So we've seen Morel make some pretty good plays over there. We've seen him make the routine plays. We've seen also the same things that have plagued him, you know, at third base the entire time that we've seen him in his big league career of, you know, wild throws, you know, a little bit inaccuracy overall, just mistakes on even some simple plays. So we've seen a little bit of both, and I think that that's kind of just going to happen. I do think that it was probably good for him to spend the entire spring at one position. He's working out there a ton, you know, taking a lot of ground balls, doing all he can to kind of get ready there. And I think at third base, you know, if it's not him, maybe Bush can go over there. I think he's a backup option. Miles Mastroboni, and then, yeah, without Wisdom, it also depends on if Nick Madrigal, who's recovering from a hamstring injury, if he's ready to go on opening day or if he starts on the IL. If he is ready, then I think, you know, he's the main backup at third base and maybe even a defensive replacement late in close games as well. But if he's not ready, then, yeah, I think we're probably Mastroboni and Bush are the guys that are behind Morel there. At first, the Cubs really like Bush defensively at first base. I think there's definitely some questions, you know, about is he going to be able to hit at the big league level, because he only had like a 25-game sample for the Dodgers last year. It was all inconsistent. I don't know if he ever even started on back-to-back days with them, but it was over the course of the full year. But he was the AAA MVP. He had just incredible numbers, drove in about a run a game, scored about a run a game in AAA last year. So, you know, he's a top prospect. He's a guy that has proven all he can in the minors, and the Cubs really feel like he deserves a runway in the big league. So we'll see. You know, he's an unproven guy, but has looked pretty good this spring at the plate, another left-handed bat. So, and then without him, it looks like Garrett Cooper, especially now, like I said, that Dom Smith is gone, looks like Garrett Cooper, the veteran on a minor league deal, that he probably makes the team on the opening day roster and provide some depth at first or DH or whatever else. So I think the Cubs have options. And then, you know, the fact that Bellinger can always move over and Tauchman can play center, I think also gives the Cubs some versatility on the roster.
Can we have Bellinger play third while Bush plays first and Tauchman play center? Because Bellinger's a gold glover wherever he goes. So can he play third too?
You know what? I would love to see a left-handed third baseman or shortstop. I haven't seen that since like the 16-inch softball days here in Chicago.
Yeah, I played against a guy named Bobby Mitchell. He made the big leagues for the Dodgers, a defensive whiz. He played shortstop left-handed, and they went to the Little League World Series and lost to Mexico 1-0. But he played it left-handed. So, yeah, wow. Let's come on. You're certainly guarding the line, right? Late in the game, you're guarding the line with a left-handed third baseman. All right, let's get that started, Tony.
Sounds good.
All right, thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Tony Andracki of MarqueeSportsNetwork.com covering the Cubs. Take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk more Bears with the Sports Hub, as Mark Rohde and I discussed. Hub Arkish is next. Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.